That is the pattern. Now, nowadays, with the housing shortage and so on, you find many young people living with their in-laws, but they don't like it. The moment they can afford it, they will, as they find a place, they will move away. Or even in talking, they commiserate each other on the fact of having to put up with in-laws and so on. On the other hand, in Chinese family, even in modern times, you find that after marriage, it is a matter of accepted usage to live with your parents. For the male, for the daughters, naturally she will go to her husband's house. But for the son, after marriage, it is expected thing for him and his wife and their children to live with his parents. Now, what happens is that later on, if the two women cannot get along, they usually break up. But there is usually a time lag. Usually, if there are only two women and the same, only one daughter-in-law, they usually do not break up. Usually, when there is another son got married, there are three married women under the same roof. The situation usually gets very complicated, and sooner or later they disintegrate. But there are instances, even today, of large families having three, four, five generations under the same roof. And furthermore, the social prestige is on the side of those families that can hold on to one another for a longer period of time. In the United States, you know such a thing like Congressional Medal of Honor for bravery and so on. Certainly not every soldier is brave. But the fact of some soldiers getting this Congressional Medal tends to affect the attitude of the rest, many other soldiers who were not so brave to begin with. And so it was in China, except it's not for bravery. It was for the family, those families that had been able to hold on together for three, four, five, six, even nine generations together, would get a special imperial edict, like a congressional medal. Except this Chinese medal is awfully large. It usually comes out like this kind of big plaque, about this high and this long, gold gilded with four characters in the center saying the five generations under the same roof. On the upper hand, it would say this honor is conferred on such and such a family during the reign of such and such an emperor, and then down below says where is the locality, and so on. The family can hang this big plaque up onto the right above the lintels to the family home, and that can last for many, many generations for everybody to see. Now you see, so that on the one hand, there is the potentiality of the family getting very big. On the other hand, there is the social prestige given to those families who can hold out in a big manner. And in the United States, on the other hand, even if there are two generations under the same roof, two married generations under the same roof, they still don't like it. They tend to break it up. That is why I say the American family is potentially smaller. The Chinese family is potentially larger. It has potentiality for being large. What usually happens in China is that the wealthier classes are the scholarly classes, are the bureaucratic classes. These are the upper classes. The upper classes usually try desperately to live up to the old traditional ideal of the big family. So in those families, very often you will find three or four generations under the same roof. But in order to do that, somebody has got to make a sacrifice. That is, you cannot have an individual pattern, everybody trying to have a voice. What usually happens is that in those families, the women are suppressed. The women are, for example, if two women quarrel, obviously if the daughter-in-law quarrels with the mother-in-law, then the son would come in to brush the daughter-in-law aside and say, you are wrong, regardless of the circumstances. And then everything is fine. At any rate, on the institutional level. With the poorer families, which are the majority of the Chinese families, the situation is quite otherwise. In the first place, the husband is very much dependent upon the wife for personal services. You know, many marriages, in fact, most marriages are kept together because of a habituation between husband and wife. So that the wives in the poorer families can withhold personal services, or one thing or another, make life very, very uncomfortable for the husband if he does not side up with her. But the point is that as soon as he sides up with her, then the family breaks up and you get a smaller family. So that what happens in China is the vast majority of the families tend to break up after two or more persons become males become married, whereas the upper classes, which are few, tend to remain on the big family ideal. And this naturally would give the Chinese average a little bigger than the American average. But in China, this potentiality and the social ideal are very real things. Now, the third contrast is that in China, in the Chinese family, as contrasted with the American family, there are very definite rules covering not only the husband-wife relationship, but also covering a much larger number of relatives. In the American family, on the other hand, it mainly is a matter of individual adjustment, even between the husband and wife. And certainly is the case between in-laws. For example, you have no definite duties toward the mother's in-law or the father's in-law. These individuals would come into your lives only if you like them or if they happen to like you. It's on a friendship basis. It's not definitely on an institutional basis. Whereas in China, it is on a definitely regulated basis. There are definite rules as to what you must do, what you mustn't do, and so on. Now, therefore, I would say, in terms of this contrast, the United American family is among the simplest of the world. It's not necessarily, I mean, when I say simplest, it's not the worst or the best. I don't mean that at all. I mean, merely from the point of view of an anthropologist, the family organization is among the simplest in the world, whereas the Chinese family is among the most complicated in the world, and it could go so complicated as to be very cumbersome. But the contrast is perfectly clear. So that in China, for example, the husband and wife take each other for granted. That is, in the first place, they were not married by romantic love. The marriage was arranged. I did not mention that because I don't think that's so important. It usually is pointed out as being some great thing, but I think that's secondary. The main thing is that the husband and wife take each other for granted. Whereas in the United States, the husband and wife ideally have to woo each other anew every day. That is, she has to put on a new dress and to show him her best every day to make it, and he has to bring her flowers, remember the anniversaries, remember all those 1,000, it's those little things that count. Now, well, in China, these little things, they take it for granted. That is, if he did not woo her anew, or if she did not woo him anew every day, they're still husband and wife. I mean, if they're husband and wife, they're husband and wife. That's all that there is to it. Now, if you're a husband, you do a certain number of things. If you're a wife, you do a certain number of things. There are these number of obligations and duties, and you just have to carry them out. And it's not a question of whether you get along or not. Whether you get along or not, you will have to get along. Now, this you see, not only this, but this is all the same thing holds true with parent-child relationship. In the Chinese family, the parent-child relationship is also less subject to individual peculiarities and more a matter of institutional arrangement. So that if a father does not like a son, he cannot just cut him off. Or if a son does not like his father, no matter where you go, they will ask who your father is. Now you can't get out of it so easily. You see. Now in the United States, on the other hand, the American family, if the husband does not like the wife, or vice versa, they separate. Parents don't like the children, and children don't get along. They separate. They can sever these ties much more easily. Now these are no small matter. If you can sever the ties much more easily, if it is a question of individual adjustment every day, all the time you have to feel out whether the other person likes you or not, now this puts a much greater strain on the individual's adjustment. Whereas in the other situation, you can take it for granted, you're much more definite. As to, I mean, you don't have to worry whether he said something today, did he mean it? Or did he mean something else? And so, well, he said that, that's all right. He says that, say something else tomorrow, so what? You just go on. Now, these are the three outstanding contrasts that I can see between the two family systems. Now, there are a number of others, but I cannot mention all of the others. I merely single out these three. And from my point of view, as an anthropologist, these three contrasts have a large number of consequences on the individual, on the Chinese and the American individual. Now, here are some of the consequences. Now, on one side, I would say that the American individual is freer, and the Chinese individual is less free. He's more encumbered. He is much more encumbered by institutional considerations. However, this very freedom means more insecurity as compared with the Chinese system of less insecurity. Now, when I mention the word insecurity, do not necessarily think it is something bad. I know we have psychiatrists and analysts and so on telling us that so-and-so is insecure, so much so that they tell us that the whole culture is insecure and so on. And much of the time, they have not examined themselves. Now, who is really secure? How much security is really secure? Nobody has ever answered this question. In the psychiatrists talk very glibly about insecurity, but they never have defined how much insecurity is insecurity. How much security is good? Now, the only good, really secure person that I can see is a person who is buried in a graveyard. Now, that's really, really secure. All the rest of us are insecure. We are more or less secure in one way or another. All right? So I'd say the American family makes the individual less secure, enables him to, relative, compared to the Chinese system, the individual has a greater sense of security. I don't mean that the Chinese person has a perfect security. To be perfectly secure, you have to be dead. Now, the second consequence of this is that the American family generates a greater emotionality than the Chinese family. Let's say a greater emotional intensity in the individual than the Chinese family. Now, this has come about mainly because, one, the family being very small, the parents are the absolute masters in the house, so that if a child is punished by the father, the mother usually takes a united front, and the child absolutely has no way out. That's in the American family. What the parents do are absolutely final as far as the child is concerned. If there's a grandmother or some neighbor or some in-law that comes in and says, "Oh, don't punish little Johnny," this will cause a family crisis and the grandmother will get thrown out in the American family. On the other hand, in the Chinese family, this doesn't hold true. The parents, the Chinese father may want to be very authoritarian, but there are many, many different forces that come in to affect his authority. For example, one thing, if he is in the process of punishing his son, his mother, the father's mother, can just come in and say, "Well, I will take Johnny away." There's absolutely nothing that he can do about it. Or if he says, "Now I'm going to let Johnny stay home because he did such a thing that he shouldn't have done, and he's not going to go out today." Well, his grandfather comes along, and brother-in-law or sister-in-law comes in and takes Johnny away. There's absolutely nothing he can do about it, because the overall idea is that you should maintain the big family unity. You should not squabble over this matter. Let this affect your big family unity. But when you do that, your control over the children is not complete. If your control over your children is not complete, the children's sense of rebellion against you also is not complete. You see, now if the parents are the absolute masters over the children, then the parents to the children will be the only gods or the only oppressors, and the children's feelings will be very intense. On the other hand, if there are any number of other individuals that come in to take the individuals to relieve this thing, then the individual is not likely to be very intensely emotional against the parents. Now, for this reason, the individual does not have the emotional intensity of the American individual, simply because he does not have the social and cultural need to begin with. Now, you may ask me, what is the now you may ask me, what is the evidence for this insecurity versus security, and this emotionality versus relative lack of emotionality? Now I would give you the following lines of evidence. Now on the good side, for example, if you look over the American family scene and you look over the Chinese family scene, you will find this comes clear in any investigation, any newspaper reports, or any other kind of personal observations, that in China, there are many, many different kinds of crimes, but crimes against family members are very rare. Now, here in the United States, people, the parents constantly worry about their children not loving them. Children constantly worry about not being loved. And they ask each other, honey, how do you like that? And are you having a good time? And honey, do you love me? And so on. So these are very evident to me. Now, they do that, and yet there are many, many, many cases in which family members commit serious crimes against one another. They kill each other. Another. They kill each other against one serious crimes against one another. They kill each other.